if you did come from that background of college or uni or film school or whatever, and you actually went out and got these licenses or qualifications, I know then that you actually want to be in the industry. I know that you want to do this job because you've spent this money, you've spent six months to a year working on that. Of course you're dedicated. Why wouldn't I take you on? If you've managed to do this as well as going to a film school, of course I'm going to take you on, because that means that I know that you want to do this job.
Welcome to Filmmaking Framed, your video podcast uncovering the realities of filmmaking. I'm your host, Daniel Hughes.
And I'm your host, Tom Dexter.
With us today is electrical best boy, Mike Bonner. Mike has worked on Day of the Jackal, A Gentleman in Moscow, and The Reckoning. Great to have you with us, Mike.
Thank you for having me.
No, really excited,
appreciate
man.
It. Yeah, really appreciate it.
So please, can you define the role of a best boy?
Okay. Essentially, a best boy electrician. I've not been doing it too long. This is only maybe my fourth, fifth year. So still relatively new in this role. But within the electrical lighting department, you are essentially the middleman who deals with the logistical side of the whole lighting department. So the gaffer essentially only wants to focus on the set, the floor, and keeping the DOP as happy as possible, and keeping his team happy. He doesn't need to be dealing with locations or getting this set rigged or things like that. Making sure gear's arriving on time, any extra labour is sorted. So that's what I do.
And that gear can include the machines.
Yes, exactly.
Could you give a kind of overview of the different machines that you typically book?
So usually they can vary from small scissor lift or small genie boom to get up to, you know, 20 feet up to a window, or a huge cherry picker, a 76 meter cherry picker that needs to either light a valley or get over a church through some stained glass windows or something like that. Yeah, so they can vary from really small to really big, depending on the budget, the size of the job, what job it is, if it's actually needed. One thing that is usually the case when it comes to machines is if you're shooting at night time. So if you're shooting at night time, night exteriors especially, a street may only be lit with the lampposts, whereas you'd need something much heavier to kind of bring the whole scene to life, essentially.
Makes sense. Mm. And how much time does it typically take to rig one of those kind of machines? Obviously, it varies.
It could depend. Usually, you could do it in an hour if you've got the right amount of people, or in other cases, it could take a whole day to rig however many machines. Like I said, if it's a church or a cathedral, when they've got 15 stained glass windows on either side, a stained glass window takes out so much natural daylight that you'd need a certain amount of lights coming through each window. So that could take all day with over 10 of you.
That makes a ton of sense. And so you've explained the role of a best boy. What are some of the common misconceptions people have about the role?
One thing that people joke about is that you don't do anything because you're not necessarily on set all the time. There's a common joke that the best boy introduces themselves to the DP on the very last day because you don't see each other.
Yeah.
Whereas in reality, they are behind the scenes. We all work behind the scenes, but a best boy, or essentially any person in their department that deals with logistics that aren't on set, they are usually the people going around different locations and working with different people to make sure that everything runs as smoothly as possible for me, for the gaffer and the lighting department. So essentially a best boy, electrical best boy's job is to make sure the gaffer's life is as easy as possible.
Yeah.
So making sure they've got the right people, making sure they've got the right equipment, because the gaffer's got so much in his head already, looking at the scene, the shots, making sure it's lit properly. He can't be thinking about, is this rigged at this next location? Have we actually got those people booked for that day and that day? Has this guy been paid? You know, things like that. He doesn't need to be worrying about that.
So it sounds like you'll do a lot of what in other departments would typically fall under the coordinator role.
Yes.
In terms of manpower, equipment.
Exactly, yeah. Logistics.
Yeah. And who are the departments that you would tend to interact with the most in a best boy punch?
Generally, obviously, as a best boy or just lighting but in general?
We'll do best boy first and then we'll broaden it to electrical department.
With a best boy specifically, mainly production, locations department especially, the accounts department for things like, well, things getting paid, people getting paid invoices, payroll, stuff like that. And then art department.
Interesting.
Yeah, so when it comes to art department, or props, should I say, they work very closely together. They have, when it comes to sets, they have lights that they want to put onto set or electrical equipment that they want to bring onto the set to see if it works within the scene. So then if it doesn't, they'll come to us and say, is this okay to put in the shop? And we'll check it over. Or I'll say to them, would you mind ordering these strip lights instead of these strip lights? Because the ones that you've bought, they'll flicker on camera. Whereas if you get these ones, we've tested them before. We know that this will work. So yeah, art department as well.
And with the kind of art department, obviously there's the art department have what's called practical sparks, and then you guys are kind of main sparks. What is the dividing line between if something is going to be handled by yourselves or handled by prac sparks?
Prac sparks generally, they pre-rig things, but they'll work predominantly with art department. So if it comes to wiring up a set with, let's say, in a kitchen with strip lights, prac spark would do that, or kitchen sockets, or things like that in sets. They'll do all that before we get in there. But we will work with them directly to make sure that everything is running smoothly. Because essentially a prac spark is its own little department, essentially.
So, and please correct me if I'm wrong, because it's something I definitely want to learn more about. Would it be fair to say that prac sparks handle the lights that would conceivably exist in a space, but like if there was no film crew there? So, for example, the strip lights in a kitchen or perhaps a lamp.
Yeah.
Whereas you guys would be concerned with the lighting of a frame.
Yeah, that's the same. Essentially, yeah. But when it comes to any electrics on set, obviously we are still involved in that. So if lamps weren't working, it's up to us to figure out how to work. If a socket's not working, it's up to us to do that. But yeah, when it comes to pre-rigging and things, the prac spark will be involved with the riggers at the same time to make sure that this is going the right way, or this socket's working this way, or blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and I want to highlight that for any new entrants to the industry, which is don't mess with power. that's a great way to upset the electrical department.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I filmed in a house when I was a runner, and one of the other runners decided to put the kettle on, blew the whole house.
Mm-hmm.
And So then there was no power at all. Because you guys are constantly working out the load on the electrical systems and what can be plugged in.
Yeah, yeah. Generally, on day-to-day life, on a film set, people will generally ask us if it's okay to plug this heater into this cable or whatever. Sometimes you get some people that just don't think about it because it's not natural to them to, like you said, flick a kettle on or something like that, but it then does blow the power. So then, yeah, we just politely ask everybody to just check with us first, especially when it comes to like the DIT or the monitors or something like that. And vice versa, we'll always ask DIT if it's okay to switch the Jenny off, because they've got a lot of data to go through. And they might be using our power. They'll have a battery system anyway, but it's just courtesy for us to ask them to just give them a 5-minute warning so that they can switch over.
And if any of the audience don't know DIT?
Digital Imaging Technician, yeah. So they handle the rushes from each take or each scene. And sometimes they can be an on-set grader, so they'll actually work with the colours while they're on set. But that depends on the size of the production.
Can you kind of go through what all of the roles in your department are, kind of maybe starting from the junior level, working your way up, just very briefly explaining what that role is and what they might do in a kind of a couple of sentences?
Yeah, so in general, the electrical department, Sparks, don't really have trainees. It's slowly coming into practice having a trainee, like most other departments do, but because the electrical department, you're essentially working with electrics, it's hard to run or organise a trainee scheme for the electrical department without them going through another avenue where they can get electrical experience. but essentially not at the bottom, but the basic spark, they will, they're on set, or they might be off set, and they'll rig all the lamps that the gaffer and the best boy asked for, or they'll bring in poly, white poly to bounce or anything like that, or frames that need making. On a typical five person team, you'll have the floor spark, which is, they deal closest with the gaffer on the set. So if it's a small room like this, it'll only be, let's say, the floor spark and the gaffer that are on set. The other sparks will stay outside and rig lamps outside and various things like that. And then you have two truck sparks. So one will stay on the generator, and they'll look after the generator. They're called the Jenny Ops. They start up the Jenny in the morning, go check the oil and water. They'll run out any mains. So that their responsibility is to oversee the generator, make sure that the power is the correct level and nothing's unbalanced or anything like that. And then the other truck is the lighting truck electrician. That's usually where you've got most of the lamps, most of the little fiddly lamps, the LEDs. And their job is essentially to be a storeman for the electrical department, if that makes sense. Things come off the truck, things go back onto the truck. They know exactly what's come off and exactly what's gone back on. So there, those three, in a typical five-person team, those three are the sparks. And then you've got the best boy, which is usually what I do now in general, but not, I haven't done my whole career, obviously. And like I said before, the best boy is the middleman. So they'll sort out the logistics between the lighting department and other departments. So they've got to keep the lighting department as happy as possible and other departments, from production to locations to art department to even cameras and grips. And then you've got the gaffer. And the gaffer oversees, he's the head of the department, so he oversees everything. But he is focusing on, or she is focusing on, the DOP and other HODs on the set, and that's essentially the job of a lighting department, in a sense.
And would it be fair to say that, other than yourself as the best boy, the person the gaffer works closest with is the DOP, director of photography?
Usually, yeah, the DP, the director of photography, and the director, yeah, but also, like the key grip and the camera operator, when it's on a set, when it comes to certain shots and things like that. But essentially, yeah.
And presumably the production designer and art department on, you know, where you can light, because and exactly. What they can put in that's not going to block those lights. Or
exactly, yeah. Yeah, but one department that some people don't realise that lighting, but especially a gaffer, is involved with is makeup. So when it comes to certain scenes or certain shots, let's say us like this, for example, it's all quite soft and it's lovely. Whereas there'll be some shots where it's quite an intimate scene, so that means you can't light from up top, because eventually you'll get under shadows under their eyes, and that's one of the worst things you can have for a makeup department, because you could have the prettiest person on the planet, but if they've got dark under eyes that the makeup department have worked so hard on to make them look really good, it doesn't work. So then you need to liaise with the makeup designer or the makeup supervisor to see if you can either bounce a bit of light back into the face so that they're softer, or think about a different lighting setup, things like that. Yeah,
that's really interesting. That makes a ton of sense, but I never would have thought of it.
Yeah, it's the same with maybe not now, because we're using more LED lamps, so they're much cooler, but we still use a lot of tungsten lamps, and tungsten give off heat, a lot of heat. So if you're in a studio with a lot of tungsten lamps, a cast member might actually have a lot of makeup on. And if they feel a bit sweaty, that means the makeup artists have got to go in with some tissue or something to try and get the sweat off. But that's where you'd need to work with them to see if you can actually change that hard tungsten lamp to something a bit more softer that but gives the same effects, so that it's not just one big heater in a studio.
And what are the advantages of LEDs versus tungsten?
This is a broad area, but cost is one. To run tungsten lamps it means the generator's working harder, so that means fuel. It's more eco to use LED, obviously. But usually with LED you can get much softer lamps or softer light sources, which works in some aspects if that's what you're going for, clean lighting. then yeah, LED is great because you can, they're naturally soft, because they're not a single bulb like a tungsten lamp is. They're a bunch of diodes all together, arranged in whatever shape. So it's a cluster of lamps.
Less easy to break, presumably, the LEDs, or
you'd think so, but because there's a lot of technology in an LED lamp, there's a lot to go wrong. So even though they are cost effective and they're more eco-friendly, there are certain issues when it comes to, yeah, like I said, because there's more technology in them, there's a lot more stuff to go wrong with them. But it's generally the way it's going. We're generally going down the LED route. Every supplier and every manufacturer is trying to recreate what can be done with a tungsten lamp, but in an LED. Sometimes it works, but most of the time it doesn't.
And what can be done with a tungsten?
I think that's more of a question for an old school DP. But essentially, it's really hard to recreate the feel of a true tungsten lamp. So a true tungsten lamp, this is when you get into foot candles and stuff like that. It just has a certain effect on camera that you can't really recreate with LED. You can with some shots, and depending on the budget or the location or where you are, it does work. But most of the time, there's some certain old school DOPs that will only shoot with tungsten lamps because they're used to that effect. They love that effect, which it's not a bad thing. You know, if production are happy with that, with costs and everything, then that's fine. And that is generally the case sometimes, that you only shoot with tungsten. Whereas if you've got other DPs that don't really mind, and they like to experiment with different lamps and different lenses and things like that, they're fine with using LED. And then you've got most people that use a mixture of both. So have a mixture of both is probably the best.
One of the big challenges of tungstens, like you say, is heat.
Yeah.
So from a location and studio management perspective, which I've done in the past, is we shot in a studio and we had a lot of tungstens and we were shooting on a set with a thatched roof.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the big considerations is keeping the set cool enough, one, for comfort for all of the crew and the cast, and two, for health and safety. Yeah. So it's very easy for these lights to, like, you know, that thatched roof could catch fire. So on that particular project, there's a big fire department team on set constantly going around measuring the heat giving off, so that we didn't start a fire on the set.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I've been in situations like that where we've had studios where they're not dedicated film studios. It might be like an old warehouse or something. But because they're built like warehouses, they're steel or aluminium roofs, and if we're using a lot of tungsten lamps, naturally it's going to heat up, especially in the summertime. So then, yeah, like you said, we had to bring in aircon units and switch them on in between takes because it was so hot in there. But yeah, a good way to overcome that is to use LED. And that obviously inevitably reduces costs with everything, cable size, generator size, power, things like that.
We did a day for night as well, for people listening, where we were shooting during the daytime, but it was a night scene. And we used blackouts on all the windows, but it was summer and it's hot outside. Yeah. And we had tungstens. So it was...
You can't win, can you?
Very hot inside that. Like, it was just a house scene, but it was very, very hot.
Yeah.
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 So that's a big consideration.
And would it be correct that tungsten is used more in period dramas?
Generally, yeah. Generally. Because period... I don't know really why, but I think mainly because period was use of a lot of candles. A lot of candles, a lot of not tea lights, but, you know, lanterns and things like that. So that's usually why period is mostly shot with tungsten. But there are certain shows and even films, obviously films, that use hard tungsten light that you can't recreate with an LED. And you just can't.
And for anyone who doesn't know, hard light compared to soft light?
Hard light is looking for more shadows, or it's more directional. So, like I said, in a church or a cathedral, you'd really struggle with an LED lamp outside of the windows, because stained glass windows in a church, they take out so much light, so much stop, essentially, that you can't recreate that with an LED. An LED wouldn't be able to penetrate the glass as hard as a tungsten or a HMI, a daylight hard lamp. So that it'd be pointless to have 20 soft lights around a cathedral or a church because it just wouldn't penetrate it. So you'd have to use hard light. That's usually why cathedral or church scenes or things like that, they're big rigs. They're expensive rigs. It could be pre-rigged for 2 or 3 days before we even shoot there. It's because you need that punch to actually get into the church, into the cathedral, because the windows take out so much light. So in certain areas, that's when it's useful.
You mentioned that different DPs will experiment with different light combinations and have different preferences. Is there much chance? I guess my question is it only when you're on set or on a job that you get to, as an electrical department, test out these lights, or are there situations where outside of it where you're testing lighting?
You can usually, you test on the job. Maybe not for big scenes because time is money and you can't do it on the day. But usually if the DP or a gaffer have certain things that they want to test out, you can have camera tests or pre-lights. So usually you'll have a pre-light day where that's a whole day to essentially work out, is this going to work? Is that lamp going to work with this shot? Things like that. So that's when you can test different lamps, different soft frames or anything like that, different sizes of lamps. Is it going to work with that lens? And things like that.
And the gaffer will request a particular lamp, and then you as the best boy would then source and acquire that for those pre-lights and ready.
So the best boy and the gaffer will work, well, obviously directly, usually on a lighting list for every location or every studio rig or anything like that. We'll work on it together. It's mainly the gaffer's decision overall, but we'll work directly on that list. And then us together, we will liaise with the lighting companies or the rental houses of whichever department to see if that will work. And then I'll go back and forth with production, see if we can change this or change that. I'll speak to the lighting companies to if they've got any issues, if we've got any issues. If they've not got a certain lamp or a certain generator or whatever, it's then up to us to work out how to resolve that issue.
And you're on hiring and off hiring lamps as and when you need them based on your schedule and the scenes.
Yeah, exactly. Usually you'll have the lighting truck and the generator will have, that's your standard shooting kit, and that'll get you through the job. Whereas things that need pre-rigging or de-rigging, they will be hired as extras.
And let's turn to you. How did you get into the industry? When did you know you wanted to work in the electrical department?
So I wouldn't say controversially at all, but I went to film school.
How dare you?
I know. Yes, I started off in college and then I went to university, which was Manchester Film School. So that was 3 years of mainly practical learning on a film set. It was called single camera drama, and we had modern equipment. It wasn't like other colleges or film schools where it's quite basic gear. This was actually quite well established equipment that you're actually going to use in the industry. So I spent 3 years there and graduated. But I think it was in my first year I realized that I wanted to do lighting. I didn't go into film school wanting to do lighting at all. I think anybody that starts off going to film school, you either want to be a writer, director, a camera operator. Everybody wants to be a camera operator. But then I quickly realized that as soon as I went there, your mind is opened to 30 different job roles, from script supervising to props to a grip. I didn't know what a grip was before I went to film school. Nobody does. I thought a grip essentially was a gaffer when I was in my first month there. That's how little you know going into a film, because you're still a student at the end of the day, aren't you? So yeah, I realised that I wanted to do lighting from another student that was there that I work closely with now. And then essentially just tried focusing on that. But because I was in film school, I did toy with other departments. So camera department, sound department, I ventured into sound and camera, even writing and directing. You know, just testing the waters with every department, just to make sure that when I did leave, that's the right department that I wanted to be in. So essentially, while I was in my third year, I was already working. I was very fortunate to be already working in the industry as a trainee, on a few Bollywood jobs here and there, and you know, just as a daily on this drama or this drama. So when it came to me actually finishing film school, I'd already had the contacts to get myself out there. I'd already had my driving I'd already had my driving license by that time, so I could get to the shoots. But I very quickly realized that I needed, if I wanted to be a spark or electrician in the industry, I needed to get electrical qualifications straight away, because you can't. It's quite frowned upon to just come from a college or a film school as a spark specifically, because it is an electrical department and you are an electrician by trade. So you do need qualifications or certifications to back you up with that, because you are playing with electrics on set.
And what are some of those certifications that people could look to do?
So like a City and Guilds qualification, BS7671, like a 18th edition, a level 3 electrical qualification. There's a temporary power electrical qualification called the 7909, which is it's more tailored for our industry because it's temporary installations, generators, things like that. But that's like a basic one that you need. In general, you should have. It's good to have.
It's good from a health and safety perspective, a risk assessment perspective. Yeah.
Especially now that people can get away with saying you're a competent person, but in reality, you do need to be a qualified person. So that's what I very quickly realized early on, that I needed those qualifications.
And these qualifications cost money, presumably that you paid out of your own pocket, course, so that you could get the work later.
Yeah, and that's the unfortunate bit. You know, you spend this much money going to uni or whatever as a student, and now you realize that you've got to pay for these extra qualifications. But in general, it all comes back around. And especially, I was told early on to get my HGV license. Because essentially, if you have your HGV license, you can get on one of the shooting trucks quicker, you know, because you can drive that truck. So gaffers or best boys, when they're looking for crew, they'll look through the contacts and see who's got the HGV. And that usually bumps you up the list a little bit. But in general, you'll make that money back I made it back within the first week. I was very, very lucky to make that money back, because I got on a commercial. Commercials pay more money. But it is an investment. They are investments that you do, you know, going to get this course or get this qualification. They are investments for your career. If you actually want to do it like that, they're investments for your career that will eventually come back around and benefit you.
Do any of those need renewing?
When HGV, yes, but only like, I can't remember the years, but electrically, it's just to keep on, it's good to keep on top of things. And new editions of things will come out every however many years, 5, 10 years or whatever. So it's good to keep your knowledge topped up, because new technology comes out and you will forget things. If you only stay in one lane, that you are only going to focus on that lane, where in reality, things move on all the time. So it's good to keep on top of all that stuff.
How has the rise of electric journeys kind of affected film sets?
Wow. Well, I think inevitably it's already started going down the battery route now. And even jobs that I've done in the past couple of years, we've started using more battery power for certain things. So like if it's a small LED or something like that, you can run it off a little 2 kilowatt battery. So that saves you having a generator at a certain location. Or if you're doing day exteriors, you don't have to have a little towable generator. You can actually use these batteries. But I think in future, in general, the way technology is moving is more towards batteries, and I think we'll eventually have hybrid generator battery systems, 18-ton truck battery systems, where they are a mixture of both, so it is more environmentally friendly.
While still having the ability to generate power,
yes,
at a flick of switch, because that's the advantage that fuel generators have, is as long as you can keep refueling it, you'll keep generating power, whereas and you can refuel it, I believe, while the generator is on.
Yes. Yes.
Whereas an electrical genny, you don't have the same freedom to power it up, and it takes a lot longer to recharge a genny than it does to fill a fuel tank.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. Yeah.
And so you said your first job was a commercial. Where did you go from that commercial?
No, so my very first job was a Bollywood job.
How was that?
Carnage.
Yeah.
Yeah, carnage.
For any new entrants, Bollywood jobs have a reputation for being more chaotic.
Yeah. Yeah, because people in different countries, they work in different scenarios. And they obviously have their way of working. And so then if anybody from another country comes over to England or wherever we're shooting, we have to adapt with each other. There might be a language barrier, or they might do things certain ways. But in general, Bollywood jobs are a bit chaotic, just because that's the way they work.
Yeah,
and we generally don't work in the same way. So it's usually a case of trying to find the balance of working with each other so that the job can actually get done.
Absolutely.
But yeah, the Bollywood jobs were a couple of my first jobs, and then I got onto more like kids dramas, which are just fun. They're easy. They're simple. You're working with kids. It's children's hours, so you can't really, you know, you can't overrun, you know, certain things like that. That you're not looking at massive lighting setups or anything like that. They're generally easy jobs, easy to work with. Everybody wants the same thing. And that's generally how I started out.
Can you explain why you can't overrun on jobs with children actors?
Children are limited to a certain amount of time during the day. Yeah. So whereas adults, you can essentially you could work however many hours you wanted within a day or a week, but because they're children, you have to stick to a specific set of hours. I can't remember how many hours it is, but there's no budging on that at all.
Yeah,
you know, that's the law.
You can't
fiddle with their hours in the slightest, because that's when you get fined, or the production company can essentially shut down. When it comes to kids' jobs, they are just easy to work on, because the producers, they're not looking for massive lighting setups or anything like that. You can create a really good show with a limited amount of resources, which is good.
Makes sense. And then where did you go from children's?
So that's when I started meeting other gaffers and other sparks, which then inevitably broadens your doors, essentially. So that's when I met a gaffer that I normally work with, who told me to get my HGV, because he knew that if I got my HGV, I could essentially work with him, or he'd know people that would need a HGV spark. So I did it, and I got it. I had to pay for it myself, and obviously I knew that it would be an investment, but it's an investment that paid off, because when I passed at 5 to 9 in the morning, I had had a job by 11 o'clock, which was a commercial for 3 days, which essentially then paid off the whole HGV course. But by having that license, that was it then. I could work with anybody, essentially, anybody that needed it. And I'd not stopped working for however many years it was since then, whether it was because I'm a HGV or not, but because I had my HGV, it was a bigger door to open, which just boosted everything.
Having worked with you, HGV licenses are absolutely valuable, and we in locations love electrical people that can do it, but it is also a huge part of how you conduct yourself on set, how you run on set. So
yes,
that you work so continuously, take some credit there, man.
It's a big responsibility to have. It's a small thing, like having a HGV license or something like that, but it's a big responsibility, because you are in charge of an 18-ton truck. And some jobs you don't need, that, you know, the truck might be in one position for 6 weeks, but on the off chance that we were shooting outside and the trucks needed moving during the day, it's good to know that you've got that in your arsenal to be able to move those trucks. You know, so there'll be some sparks listening to this that won't even nearly dream of getting it, or they'll think that you don't need it. Yeah, you might not need it, but I think it's just good to have in your arsenal anyway. Why wouldn't you? I know it costs money, but you can make it back.
Do you think it shows a certain level of commitment to being a spark as
absolutely,
well?
Absolutely.
When you're starting out, that you're saying like, I'm so dedicated to this. I've already invested in it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've got those electrical qualifications as well. I'll show the same thing.
There'll be sparks in this industry that came from a certain background that don't have any qualifications or don't have any HGV license or whatever, that will get by, and that's fine. It doesn't mean we're going to dislike you anymore or disrespect you anymore in the slightest. But if a best boy or a gaffer knows that you've got these certain things behind you, you'll be not more well respected, but
give you an advantage. Yeah, when you're looking for
exactly. Yeah, bit more of an advantage. Yeah, yeah. But I'd never hire anybody for that reason. You know, if somebody's really good spark, and they've not got an electrical qualification to their name, but my only other option was a spark that has got this qualification, but isn't actually that good. That doesn't matter to me. I'd rather actually have somebody I know that can do the job properly, who I've worked with before. So sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it matters, other times it doesn't.
So it seems like it's something you can do to add points. Yeah. It might not be decisive, but like you don't necessarily, you don't control necessarily who your network is, but you can go into the industry with those qualifications. Yeah. And it's just that little thing to help make getting those first few jobs easier.
Yeah, especially nowadays, production companies are asking more and more for your full team to be qualified, essentially, especially with all the legalities that go on now in day-to-day life. So the production companies are usually looking to cover their sides of it. But in general, yeah, a gaffer should have a full team that can essentially look after themselves and have a basic understanding of electrics, because that's what it is at the end of the day. It might be lighting, but you're working with electrics. And if you don't know how to use those electrics or work with those electrics, you shouldn't be doing it. You know, you should be able to know why this isn't working, or is that going to overload this, and certain things like that. You shouldn't be able to just walk onto a set and start plugging things up if you've not got an understanding of it, which is why certain sparks come from like rental houses, lighting companies, where they already have that knowledge. And sometimes they'll have apprentice schemes at those rental houses where they will get electrical qualifications as well as working with the lighting equipment. So then when they do come into the industry, they already know the gear, they already have electrical knowledge, and sometimes even have HGV licenses. They've just never been onto a film set. And one of the other avenues is people who come from electrical backgrounds, you know, actual commercial sparks or domestic sparks that have never seen a film set before, but they could, their skills are in another industry completely. But when it comes to a film set, they're transferable skills. So because they're already qualified electricians, of course they can do the electrics. It might be different electrics that they're used to, but they'll know how to do it. They've just never actually been onto a film set. So yeah, I would say anybody that comes from like a film school background or a college background or something like that, in the electrical department specifically, go out there and actually get your qualifications or get these licenses. Just do anything you can to try and put it into your arsenal, because it will benefit you completely. It's not really desirable to just come from a college or a film school, even though you've been on a film set in uni or a short film or whatever. That's not the real world when it comes to film and TV.
But the benefit of being there is that, like you said, you could explore what you wanted to do and you can make lots of contacts. Exactly. So that those who do then go into the industry, exactly, you can say, oh, I worked with so-and-so at film school on a little short. Now they're a spark and they can...
Yeah, because it shows, especially, well, I'm only speaking on behalf of Best Boys and Gaffers, but if you did come from that background of college or uni or film school or whatever, and you actually went out and got these licenses or qualifications, I know then that you actually want to be in the industry. I know that you want to do this job because you've spent this money. You've spent six months to a year working on that. Of course you're dedicated. Why wouldn't I take you on? If you've managed to do this as well as going to a film school, of course I'm going to take you on, because that means that I know that you want to do this job. I've got no reason to not hire you.
Yeah, and you're showing that commitment and that graft, both to spend the money and also to take that time.
Because it's a lot of time out of work and it's a lot of money that you'll spend on this stuff. But if you've done that and you've passed in all of these areas, why wouldn't I take you on? I then know that you actually want to do this job.
Is there a certain tier in the hierarchy of the department where you have to have the qualifications? So does every gaffer have electrical qualifications, or can you get by all the way up to the top without?
No, I'd say 99% of gaffers do.
And what rough pulling it right up your ass number percentage of best boys?
Oh, I'd say the same, around 99%.
It's only really at those junior levels where some do, some don't.
Yeah.
And then those who are really dedicated might get the qualification so they can go up the tier.
Yeah. Exactly.
I assume some people can just stay Sparks, presumably their whole career if they wanted to.
Yeah.
But if you were looking to step up, you need to take those steps.
Essentially, yeah.
And what are the skills you need to develop as a best boy that you wouldn't necessarily use as a Spark? The first one I'm thinking of is, because traditionally I get the intentions, which are documents that detail what's coming from the best boy. So that would be kind of graphics and computer skills that wouldn't necessarily need.
Yeah, I wouldn't say there's anything specific in terms of that you need to be a best boy. Well, I can only speak from experience. One of the things I would say works for me is I'm quite good with people. So I'm a bit of a people person. So my relationship with production or locations or art department or whoever, I've got a nice relationship with them because I can talk to those people in that sort of way.
I can 100% confirm that. And like, big shout out if you're looking for a best boy for your job. Like, I know he's getting married soon, so you won't be able to grab him, but genuinely one of the most professional, sweet, lovely people I've ever worked with.
I appreciate that, mate. Thank you very much. But yeah, usually because you're in that role, you have to have that relationship with these people, because they're the people that you're going to be dealing with for 4 months. You might not even see the film set. You know, you might not even see the people that are on the crew. So yeah, I'd say just having a positive attitude. And when it comes to dealing with issues, if you can have a better, if the people that you've got that relationship with, the issues will be resolved much easier than if you actually don't get along, or if you got a certain ego. If in this industry is full of egos, as we all know, but unless you've got the skills and the reputation to back up that ego, it's not going to work. What's the point in you having a big ego? There's many things that I wouldn't say you'd need a specific thing to be a best boy. Like I said, I'm still fairly new to it. It's, you know, 4 years, but it's very small in the grand scheme of things. You know, you've got career best boys that have been doing it 30, 40 years, and they are the cream of the crop. They're at the top of their game, and they might have a completely different experience to what I have. They would have worked on much bigger films or much bigger TV shows, which might have dealt with other issues that I've not even come across yet.
How does working on a film versus a TV show differ?
It depends on the size of the film or the TV show. A TV show might be, like I said, it could be a kids show, which you might not have to deal with any logistics at all. You know, the trucks might be in one position for 6 months, or the lighting rigs might stay the same for 12 weeks. Whereas bigger films or bigger TV shows, yeah, you might be in a studio for 6 months. So then it's essentially the same thing. But when it comes to moving around or different locations or labor and things like that, that's when it gets different, because you've got to be all over certain things. But that's when you get onto the bigger TV shows, the bigger films, you have other people to deal with. So you're not just one best boy anymore. You have a rigging gaffer or a rigging best boy, or you might have a best boy who only stays in the office. So then if you've got a rigging gaffer, they've got a rigging team, that sort of takes some of that pressure off of you. And then you might have a floor best boy that I've not worked on a job where I've had a floor best boy before, so I can't say much on that. But that's another bit of responsibility that you don't actually have to take on. You can focus on your job. So essentially, when it comes to the bigger jobs, it can get easier. You know, the more people that are there with you. But in the same breath, some of the lower end TV shows can be just as simple and easy, because there's a lot less to deal with.
It's where those complexities come from, basically.
It's where the complexities come from, yeah, exactly.
Can you give an example in your career, and you have to give the name of the job, but just of maybe a particularly challenging lighting situation or something that went wrong and something you learned from that?
Oh, wow.
Or it could be someone you observed making a mistake and learned something, but something where, you know, that from your experience you've picked up.
That's a very good question. I'd say one of the one of the one of the best jobs I've worked on was a gentleman in Moscow. And for me, that was a massive learning curve in general for whatever reason. But it was definitely one of the longest and biggest jobs I've worked on in terms of the amount of, I was the rigging best boy in that one, so I wasn't actually the shooting best boy. So I worked under the rigging gaffer as well as the shooting best boy and the shooting gaffer.
Can you define the difference for anyone who's not sure?
So a rigging gaffer, the gaffer is on set with the best boy, but whereas a best boy would usually go off and do these rigs and certain things like that, that's what the rigging gaffer will then do. So that, again, takes a bit of pressure off the best boy. So the best boy and the gaffer only focus on what goes on day to day with the shoot. So the rigging gaffer and the rigging best boy, they are behind the scenes. So that is who locations will deal with in production as well as anybody else.
They're doing prep and strike. And
exactly. Yeah, exactly. So because I was the rigging best boy on that job, yeah, like I said, that was a complete learning curve for me because there was things that I'd not experienced before, you know, an amount of additional people that we needed for that job. Usually if a normal TV show, you may only need like 4 extra people a week, maybe, if that. Whereas this one, because of the locations that we were using and because it was a period drama and because of the requests from the DP and the gaffer that they wanted, everything was upscaled. So that was a good job to work on when it came to studio rigging and yeah, just working on different logistics that I'd not worked with before, just because of the scale of it. But then if you do another job like Day of the Jackal, let's say, even though we only did the UK unit, technically that was a bigger job than Gentleman in Moscow. But because I was the shooting best boy for the UK unit, there was already a rigging gaffer on involved and a rigging best boy. So they took a lot of that pressure off me, or us, should I say. So that job for me was relatively easy. I won't say easy, but more simplified, because we had these things in place. So then I could only focus on what I needed to focus on. So both of those jobs in general, they were great learning curves.
Can you talk about some of the, maybe just very briefly, some of the common mistakes that someone new to the department makes and what they should not do and, you know, to avoid those?
One main thing that I got told off for was running on set. When I first started out, because I was so happy to come out of film school and actually work in the industry, I was just keen, really keen, and wanted to make sure that everything was done all the time. Whatever the gaffer or the best boy asked for, I wanted to be the first person to do that, which eventually ended up in me running on set from the truck to the set or whatever. And that's one thing you shouldn't ever do on a film set is run. So that's when the gaffer told me off to, you don't need to run. You know, it's a film set, you don't need to run. It takes as long as it takes.
And what's wrong about running?
You could injure yourself. And if you injure, it's a self-employed industry. And if you injure yourself because of your stupid idea to run on set, you could be out of work for 3 months.
Yep. You can injure others, you can damage others. Equipment.
Yeah, absolutely. Even, yeah. You've got, there's no reason to run.
The irony of having runners,
yeah.
Yeah. As an actual role. But what it means is you're just moving between lots of things, yeah, constantly, lots, exactly, of tasks.
It doesn't, yeah, mean walk slowly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
yeah, work with haste where, yeah, required, but safely.
It takes yeah, as long as it takes. Yeah. If you see somebody running, then they shouldn't be running. There's no need for you to run on a film set. But that's the one thing that I got told off for specifically.
Presumably the same with when you're rigging something. If you rig it so fast just to get it done that then you've made mistakes and then you, exactly, have to re-rig it.
Exactly.
That defeats the point. You might as well do it right the first time. So exactly. If it takes a bit longer, it takes a bit,
yeah,
longer.
Yeah, because if you rush anything, you are going to make mistakes, and those mistakes could be serious. You know, if you rush a job that, if you're rigging a lamp, let's say, it doesn't have a safety chain on it, that could fall. You know, so you have to take these things seriously, and you can't rush anything in this industry, even when, if they're about to turn over and you need something straight away, you still can't rush it, because if it's still not safe, or if it means you're coming from the truck, don't run, because you could fall on your way to the set or whatever. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, really good advice.
But that's the one thing that I, one of the mistakes that I can think of that I got told off for, yeah.
And if you had a young person and they wanted to get into the industry, what advice would you give them? Other than don't run. But like to help secure their first role.
In the industry in general?
Let's do specifically electrical.
So for specifically
They've done those qualifications. They've got that. How do they... So they didn't go to film school, but they've qualified and they've got the HEV license. What's their next step?
Make as many contacts as you can. Stay as keen as possible. People always love it when you want to be there at work. You know, you could turn up on a Monday morning. You might have had a really bad weekend. But if they can see that you actually want to be there at work and do the job that you can as best as possible, that's always going to help. And then try and get your name out there as much as possible. You know, you might have a contact that doesn't message you for 5 years, but then out of the blue, they'll say, do you want to do 20 weeks with us? Like, yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much. I'm actually available. Because you never know when it could come back around. So I would say stay as keen as possible. Always keep up to date with current situations as well, whether it's equipment or the way things are moving in the industry technologically.
And how are things moving technologically for the electrical department?
More eco. Everything's becoming much more environmentally friendly, which means more LEDs, more battery systems. Yeah, things like that. That's generally the way it's going at the minute.
Are there any particular Facebook groups or WhatsApp groups that new entrants go in, or is it not really run like that?
It's hard to say because I'm not aware of any Facebook groups, me specifically, when it comes to stuff like that, because that's not the way Sparks work, really. WhatsApp groups more so, but then there are certain...
You earn your way into those WhatsApp groups.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly right. And it's especially different because I'm from Manchester, I'm from the North. We have certain WhatsApp groups where they are only for qualified people, whereas there's other WhatsApp groups that and not anybody can get into, but more people can get into.
So this might be one where it's to get into the electrical department, you look for runner work or location marshal work because that's easier to get into from the outside, and then you do a good job and you ask to be introduced to the electrical department.
Yeah, that's a good way of getting into it. You know, there's sparks in this industry that have come from other backgrounds, whether it's locations or being a runner or even camera trainees, that then actually wanted to be a spark. So then they went down the other avenue, got these qualifications, and then eventually, because they had those contacts, they came into the electrical department. So that is a good way to get into it as well.
Cool. So we'll, for the show notes, we'll put location department juniors in a runner group so that even if your ambition is electrical...
And check out the show notes on any episodes we have with those departments as well.
Yeah, because unfortunately, there's not a one-stop shop where... There's not a true trainee scheme for the electrical department where you can have the knowledge from going to a film school, learning how to light, learning the different camera settings and things like that, as well as everything electrically. There's not a one-stop shop where you can get your HGV and your electrical qualifications and go to a film school all at the same place. So you either go to a rental house.
That's another great way in.
That's a really good way to get into the electrical department, because when you're prepping for a job, you see all those people in the lighting houses, and you know their faces already. So you have that relationship with them, whether it could be tiny, but then once you get an idea that they might be coming out of the rental houses, you already know them, and then that's great because you're like, oh, he's coming out. Yeah, let's get him out on a job. That's great.
And make a good cup of coffee and...
Exactly, yeah.
You know.
Make a very good cup of tea, yeah. I made there was a best boy and a gaffer that I used to work with. He's an old boy, but he loved a cup of tea. And he'd have maybe 15, 20 cups of tea a day. And all he wanted from me was to make a good cup of tea, as well as do my job, but realistically, just make a good cup of tea, because that's what made him happy. You know, that's how he got through the day. And if that's the one thing that gets him through the day and he's got no other stresses, I'm going to make you as many cups of tea as possible. That's fine. Yeah. If you're happy with me doing that, I'll do that.
They are on working on film sets, it's long, hard days. Yes. And not even on film sets, on film jobs. And if you can make the senior members of your team make it as easy as possible for them in any way that you can, you give yourself a massive leg up getting work.
Exactly. Yeah.
Absolutely. Like I had a previous job with a boss who was a big smoker. And so I would always carry, not to endorse smoking, but I'd carry packs of cigarettes on me. And then when we're in the rain at 3 a.m. and he's like, fuck, I'm out of my last one. I'd go, oh, I've got. And he'd be like, oh, you're a lifesaver, Daniel. Oh, my God.
It's little things like that, yeah.
And it's just those little things to show that, again, not to endorse smoking. And I've had other bosses where it was the same thing with electrical power packs because your phone can't go down in this game. Yeah. And so just knowing, do they want a cup of tea? Do they need, you know, power?
Yeah, because you spend more time at work, especially in this industry, than you do in your actual, with your partners or your family.
Yeah.
So you have to have that relationship with them. You know pretty much everything about each other. You want to make your lives as easy as possible on a job like this because you're spending 11, 12, 13, sometimes 14 hour days together. You need these things to keep your mind going, to keep your brain actually functioning in a stupid industry that it is.
It's a cruel mistress that we love.
It's the strangest industry to work in because you can see all these locations that you wouldn't even nearly dream of seeing, and you get paid this money for doing these stupid hours that you do, but then you get 3 to 4 meals a day for free, and you get free parking when you go to work and things like that. So it's a bit of sacrifice from seeing your family and friends sometimes, but then it does benefit in other ways.
Absolutely,
that's why it's a stupidly strange industry that we are all involved in and we all love.
Yeah, and people outside the industry can never understand why you're like, so can you go on holiday in 4 months? You're like, I don't know, man.
Ask me in 3 months. Yeah, I'll have more of an idea.
I just want to add another. I went to National Film and Television School and we did have volunteer sparks on that who, you know, can be more junior. And that's, I just want to put it out for people if they want to just see if they want sparking and want less pressure.
Exactly, yeah.
Their student films.
And build your network.
And build your network, yeah.
And modern day now, we're always open to work experience or anything like that. Always. If the job's right for it, then, yeah, why wouldn't we have somebody shadow us or be a trainee? And there are certain trainee schemes that are slowly coming about now with things like screen skills?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, screen skills, things like that. So that it is slowly happening. But there's certain jobs that I've been on where we weren't able to do that. Let's say with the reckoning, that was a quite a controversial Jimmy Savile job, let's say.
Yep.
It would have been hard to have a work experience spark on that job because we needed to focus on certain things and trying to keep the show as safe as possible. It might have worked with enough prep, but when it actually came to it, it just wasn't the right job for it. So you can't have it on every job.
And for my final question, what is the best piece of advice you've ever received? Doesn't need to be related to the industry, just something that you live your life by.
Oh, in general?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, I've got there's a few. One of the ones in the industry was to get my HGV.
Yeah,
I was told at a very early age to get my HGV by the gaffer that I usually best boy for, because that just elevated everything. I think that was the true start of my proper professional career, because it just opened up so many doors. Whether I was even on a truck or not, I'd had those contacts because I was able to do this. I'd spent that money. And I'd made that money back within 3 days. And then it just blew up. Whereas the other pieces of advice were to just, like, I'm quite a specific person. I'm quite a unique person. Like, I'm not the manliest man or anything like that. But I'm me. And I've always been quite a happy person. So, yeah, so somebody once said to me quite early, at an early age, just be yourself. Because people are going to like you and dislike you all the time. You can't please everybody. I know now that I can't please everybody. But those people that I can't please, it's fine. I don't care, you know. So just be yourself. Don't try to be anybody else. Just do the job that you do. Do your job the best that you can. And whatever the best is that you can is the best. Is the best that you can give. Yeah. You can't force yourself to do anything else, because that's when either you're not going to be happy or you're going to start making mistakes or anything like that. You can only work towards your limitations.
And fundamentally, if you're trying to be someone you're not, you're only ever going to be a bad imitation of someone else.
Yeah.
Whereas you can be the best version of you.
Yeah, of course you can. Yeah. And you have to know your limitations. You know, if you don't know something, please ask. Nobody can ever, you can't judge somebody for not knowing something. If they don't know it, it's because they don't know it. It's when they pretend to know something, that's when you start getting in trouble, because we were under the impression that you did know that. Please don't do a job that you don't know how to do just because you think it would please somebody. Because if you make a mistake, that's going to bite you in the ass straight away.
And as a universal rule, it is so much faster to teach someone how to do something than it is to fix their mistake if they don't know how to do it and then they've done it.
Exactly. A respectful person will never judge somebody for asking a question. And you shouldn't do, because they won't know something. You know, if a spark came up to me and asked how to rig this lamp that they should have known 10 years ago, it's fine. They don't know how to do it. They might not have been taught it. But I don't want you to do it thinking you can do it and then make a mistake, because then we're going to have an issue then.
The judgment only really comes if you've told them 5 to 10 times how to do it and they still don't know how to do it. Yeah,
exactly, exactly.
But yeah, especially in junior roles, you know, you're learning.
Yeah, please ask as many questions as possible. The more questions you ask and they actually take in, the better you are eventually going to be. And if I don't know the answer, I'll find somebody that does know the answer. You know, we'll work on it together, because I might learn something at the same time.
Thanks, Mike. It's been absolutely awesome.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me. Thank you very much.